Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, the video game show that comes around every 2 weeks, like the predictable comet of Halley, but a little bit faster. Let's go with that. My name is Patrick Beja. Today, I am joined by Garrett and Justin, Garrett Wainsrill and Justin Robert Young. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right. How are you doing?
Yeah, man, I'm living the dream.
Justin, are you in your car?
I am.
Oh, that is some mobile, like, podcasting, like the mobile Hearthstoning that we're also going to be talking about in a little bit. Today is the day after the release of the Grand Tournament, the new Hearthstone expansion. We're going to be discussing that a little bit later. But before we do, let's go over a few items of news I wanted to bring to your attention. As always in this show, we try to, you know, cover the news in general and get a little bit analytical on all of those things. The first thing I would like to discuss is Metal Gear Solid 5. And if anyone's a gamer, you know about Metal Gear Solid 5, meaning that, Justin, you've never heard about this game, right?
I'm aware of Solid Snake and his exploits.
So, all right, let me ask you this. Have you played the initial Metal Gear Solid 1 back on the PlayStation 1 when you were maybe, you know, in college, yeah, being crazy?
No, that would have been more my time. I played a little bit of it. I never really got into it. Ashley, my fiance, actually was very into all the Metal Gears and just, like, played back through them a couple years ago.
So I was very much into the initial one, and then the second one I've discussed on this show a few times, so I'm not going to go back into it, but it really disappointed me because it broke the realistic, quote-unquote, thread in the game and the serious feeling in it with all of its, you know, American presidents with metal tentacles and cyber ninjas and all of that. And I never really came back to it, but Metal Gear Solid 5 is coming out in, you know, just a few days, and it's getting raving reviews. It's getting 9s out of 10s and 10 out of 10s all around. I was a little bit sullied by the Ground Zero's small experience. I didn't really love it. But with this kind of reviews, it's kind of hard not to pay attention to it. Garrett, are you going to get a PlayStation 4 just to play Metal Gear Solid 5?
Well, I already have one. So no.
All right. So did you get it just to play Metal Gear Solid 5?
Oh, Lord, no. I have traditionally not been a fan of Metal Gear Solid.
You are going to get hate mail, sir.
Oh, it's fine.
I know because I get it all the time.
If we're on that track, can I also declare that I think Final Fantasy is horrendously overrated?
Oh, wow. You like to to live dangerously.
Yeah, damn, son. He's just dropping bombs today.
Yeah. I buy PlayStations for like every game other than the ones people like get tattooed on their body.
What is it about Metal Gear that you're not a fan of?
Apparently what turned Patrick off of it. See, I was not aware there was a time in Metal Gear where it wasn't completely over the top silly and written by 5-year-olds.
That was basically Metal Gear Solid 1. Everyone keeps telling me that the third one is really good too, and the fourth one so-so, but the fifth one is apparently, you know, the best thing since sliced cheese, I'm going to say.
Bread, I think. Yeah, I know. But that's fine.
Yeah, now that my trolley comments out of the way, I will say I am interested in this one. If for no other reason than because I haven't given it the time of day for pretty much my entire life as a gamer, and it looks so darn pretty, and the reviews are so darn positive, I think I can't help myself. I think I might have to pick it up.
Yeah, definitely the same for me. I wasn't sure, but you know, it's a big open world game and it's getting such raving reviews. I don't think anyone who's a gamer can ignore it. So we'll see. Oh, what's happening, Justin?
Wait, what happened?
Well, I don't know. You're making lots of weird noises. Are you okay?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, no, I'm alive. I apologize. Okay.
Well, as long as we keep hearing weird noises, we'll know you're alive.
Yes.
So, yeah. Anyway, Metal Gear Solid 5 looks, you know, very cool open world game, very highly rated. We'll see what happens. I think I'm going to have to pick it up, but we'll see. Another piece of news I wanted to discuss is the report that a couple of YouTubers have been basically... So this is something that has been a delicate issue for a few months and years now. It's how YouTubers comply with the American federal guidelines that apply to bloggers and journalists, and basically that state that you can't really concealed advertising or advertising that is somehow not clearly labeled as advertising. In this case, it's a game company called Dead Realm that was in part funded by or created by two YouTubers, Tom Cassell, I guess his name is, and Adam Montoya. And they've been promoting the game, which is it has a lot of elements that work super well for YouTubers. Basically, players can... it's a survival horror game where the players are going to be the main character or a ghost in the environment. And so they've been playing the game on their channel, and they haven't been mentioning the fact that they are actually involved with the company. And this, to me, it's obviously a problem, but I think it shines a light on this issue of YouTubers. There are a lot of journalists that maybe don't disclose their relationships clearly enough, but I think if you're worried about that, the YouTubers is where you should turn your attention, because it's kind of a Wild West there. Any of you guys have something to comment on this?
Sorry, go ahead, Garrett.
No, I feel like it's just this type of thing. I mean, how do you really police it? Because anyone can go and start a YouTube channel. So I'm not sure what people are hoping is.
It's called the law, sir. The law states that you cannot do advertising and not mention that it's advertising if you're receiving monetary compensation. If you're a journalist, I guess the question becomes, are those guys journalists?
That's kind of the point.
Which I think, yeah. Like, I think that those laws were probably put in place at a point where there was a necessity on government to give you the power to do it. You know, the government federally regulates television channels and radio frequencies and that kind of stuff. It's interesting to see where we will really care about the spirit of those laws now that, you know, the bandwidth is infinite. You know, anybody can start a YouTube channel, as Garrett said.
What really bothers me there is that the spirit of the law is there to make sure that when you make a decision as a consumer, you are adequately informed as to, you know, the factors that contribute to you making that decision. And whether or not these guys are labeled journalists, I think it's reasonable to say that you are being misinformed, not misled, I guess is the right word. If the person is playing and saying, oh, look at this game, it looks kind of fun and I'm enjoying it, or, you know, even if they're not expressly saying, I love this game, it's misleading you in thinking that they are actually enjoying the game more than they are. When they're being paid to play it, even if they're not saying anything about, you know, how cool the game is. Surely, I think it's reasonable to expect that if they're being paid to play it, then they're not going to be saying it sucks, right? I don't think the neutral elements of it go that far. So I would like to know when that person is being compensated. But and it doesn't really matter if they're labeled a journalist or not. The fact is that these YouTubers are very popular and they're influencing purchasing decisions, right? I think it's reasonable to put the to set the line there.
Well, but I mean, I guess we get into a kind of larger political conversation when it's like, well, what's the best way to punish them? You know, is it a fine? Should they go to jail? Should we publicly shame them? Like, what is the, I mean, understanding that that's probably not something that we like. We don't like being misled, but what is an appropriate punishment?
I am a fan of public shaming.
I think the shame nun from Game of Thrones is in order.
That would be excellent.
Jokes aside, I mean, I think that's kind of what's happening here. Because it's hard to police, and I'm not sure that there will be a perfect system for policing it, because as we've said already, anyone can go start a YouTube channel with really no checks and balances surrounding. So I feel like what we're seeing happen right now with this particular YouTube channel is what we're going to probably see continue to happen. There's going to be, every now and then, someone's going to try and pull the wool over eyes. Someone's going to figure it out, and that outlet will be outed.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. You keep saying, how do we police it? But it's actually, you know, the FTC states that bloggers can do that, and anyone can go and start a blog. Now, whether or not you're going to notice every single tiny little, you know, page on the internet, obviously not. But if the blogger or the YouTuber becomes big enough, and actually I'm saying bloggers, the FTC applies these laws to bloggers. I'm pretty sure they apply to YouTubers as well. Although, again, the journalistic status is in question there, but it doesn't matter that you're not going to get in every single tiny little page if it's not a law. And maybe that's my, you know, European everything must be regulated bias coming in. But if it's not, if it's legal to just not say anything, then obviously they're going to do it. If you make it illegal, then at least they are going to have to decide whether or not to respect the law. And I think that's an important, you know, difference to have to make. No?
Yeah, I guess I'm not.
Go ahead, Justin.
I totally agree. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah.
Check. All right. I think, you know, the question is, how do you punish it? And how do you identify it?
Well, fines.
It? I think it is an interesting question.
Fines would be okay, and it doesn't have to be $1 million, you know, for everything. It's just the principle of it is, if you deceive, you know, if you break the law, there is some kind of a punishment that should be applied. And obviously, we're not going to get everyone. Obviously, it shouldn't end their career, but I think it's reasonable to expect that if they're breaking the law, then they should, I don't know, pay a fine. Seems okay, it's not like they take away their YouTube account, but although for copyright that happens, which seems backwards, that you're going to be... Well, anyway, that's a different discussion. I think there is, you know, for all the discussions we've had about ethics and game journalism in the past few months, I think there's a lack of focus on YouTubers that are a new breed of consumer informing entities. And it's a little bit frustrating that they are not being subjected to the same rules and laws. And when really it's very simple, all you need to do is do a small disclaimer at the end of your video. Maybe, you know, this video was sponsored by Ubisoft, or we are investors in this game. And I'm sure that it would have been not equally successful, but at least the exposure would have been significant. So I think there's a little bit of growing up to do in that industry, and it's too bad that the people aren't willing, or sometimes aren't willing to do it. But anyway,
that was the big surprise to me. Like, I don't know why they didn't just put it out on Front Street, because that's always been a better decision for me, you know, like reminding everybody about the Contender available on Kickstarter.
I believe it's 5 days left, and you are over your $100,000. $100,000. That's pretty amazing. I played that game. Did I tell you I played that game?
You did. You did. And you were proof positive that you don't need to
to be intelligent to enjoy it. all right. Let's move on to the discussion about the portable Steam machine. So Steam is a popular distribution platform that is pretty much that has invaded our entire lives. And there's a Steam machine that is going to go on pre-order on November 10 for $300. And it's going to be released in 2016 sometime. It's a relatively modest, it's basically a portable PC. It's a modest CPU. Obviously, it's not going to be running your giant Skyrim with 15 different mods and, you know, super demanding games. It's got 4 gigabytes of RAM, 32 gigabytes of internal memory, 720p screen, 5-inch touch. Is that something you would be interested in, Garrett? And you're going to say no, and then I'm going to change your mind.
Actually, I would say that I it has piqued my interest.
I will, darn it!
I'm not going to run out on what looks like November 10th is going on sale. I'm not going to run out on that date and drop $300. But I'm definitely curious. A huge portion of that boils down to I haven't had a chance to try out the Steam controller, and it looks like that this portable Steam machine is built around that same tech. So yeah. A lot of that's going to weigh on how successful I feel the Steam controller is, because the piece of hardware looks mighty sexy.
Yeah, it looks good. I think the concern most people are going to have is how do you adapt the UI to such a small screen when it's usually the games are supposed to be played on a giant monitor or, you know, 20 or over monitor. The thing is, not all the games are going to be available. This is called the Smack Zero, by the way. I don't know. It was initially called the Steam Boy, and obviously they had to change the name. It's not developed or produced or manufactured by Valve. It's a completely different company called Smack, and it's the Smack Zero. Anyway, it's going to play over 1,000 games, but it's not going to be every single one. The UI is an issue, but what basically turned me around when I was discussing this on the French language show I host is the fact that my Steam library is already pretty full. So let's say I already buy, you know, I buy the machine and I don't know, 10, 15, 20 games are going to be available on this from day one. And the games I get on my PC are going to be playable on this thing if it can run it. That seems like a pretty good deal.
Right. It's not something you tend to experience all that often buying a traditional console unless there's backwards compatibility involved, which lately has not been the case out the gate.
Yeah. So, yeah, I wasn't excited about this at all. And then I was like, oh, Steam games. I already have those. And
If this really boils down to, can I play Civilization on the go comfortably? And if the answer is yes, that's the maker.
That I'm not sure it will be possible, but I'm betting you're going to be able to play Hearthstone, that which you well, know obviously phones,
which I can so. Do on my phone, which I already own.
Well, that's yeah. easy. Perfect.
Hello, Justin friend.
Hello. Sorry, I'm like I almost made it in and out of my office without disrupting the podcast, and then I got caught at the very very end.
All right, so the talking about games that are already available for your machine, there are a couple of quick mentions I wanted to do about the Xbox Live games for September and PlayStation Plus games for September. Xbox Live Gold is going to include Tomb Raider on Xbox One. And I'm telling you, if you haven't played that game, you definitely should. It's Uncharted on Xbox. It is awesome. I love it. It's also going to include Crysis 3, which I'm not a super big fan of. And PlayStation Plus is going to include Grow Home, which is this very intriguing little indie game, I believe by Ubisoft, where you have to grow trees to escape the gravity of a strange planet. Everyone was talking about it very fondly when it first came out a few months ago, and it's available already. And Super Time Force Ultra, which is also super fun. So whether you're
Can there be an indie game from Ubisoft? Is that an oxymoron?
It kind of is, except it's an oxymoron that breaks the world because it's true. It's not, you know, super indie, but they have done a couple of things that are pretty indie spirited in a real sense. You know, they had that World War One game. What was the name of that game? Valiant Hearts, I think. And there's this Grow Home thing, which is seriously an indie. I think, you know, a lot of companies are realizing that if they only create AAA game until the end of the times, it's not a sound strategy, because AAA games are so expensive to develop, and so you know, you're basically betting your company every time on that one game. And that's why Ubisoft has to release a new Assassin's Creed every single year, or the company is not going to be doing well. So I think it's even, you know, we see EA even with the Yarny guy, what's the name of that game? I'm forgetting all the names. So
that's the name I remember for it as well. I can't help.
Yeah, Yarny guy, what's the name? I can't remember the name, I believe is how it goes. But I mean, so we're talking more indie as a genre, right? Like just like a style of game, and not necessarily indie as in this was made by three people in a basement and they had no money and they had to eat ramen for 6 months.
Well, so I guess they're, I don't know exactly how it's being developed, but I'm sure it's not three people with no money, because it's EA. And by the way, Yarny, the guy that has, that I can't remember the name of the game of, is Unravel. It's Unraveled, the game. I think they also go about it with indie quote-unquote methods, meaning a smaller team that has a little bit more creative freedom. And it's not as extreme as the guys that do actual indie games. But I think it is. So it's cool because you see indie games coming out of those bigger studios. But at the same time, we have to realize that I don't think it's just for, you know, the joy of creating an indie game. I think they're really looking at this as, we need to diversify our offering, and we can't just solely focus on AAA games and never do anything else. So, anyway, Grow Home is going to be available on PlayStation Plus, and Tomb Raider is the one I definitely noticed on Xbox Live. I think I'm going to get it. I already played the game when it was available on PlayStation Plus for PS3, but I might download it and get excited for the next Tomb Raider coming out in November exclusively on Xbox One, which is basically the reason I got my Xbox One to begin with.
Exclusively with a time window. I mean,
time window. You're right. It's going to be released on PC sometime next year, and after a year on PlayStation as well. But I love that game. I want to play it as quickly as I can. So
I'm right there with you.
So you have an Xbox One as well?
I have a PS4 and an Xbox One, yes.
Oh, I didn't realize you were such a console gamer. You talk about PC games all the time, so.
Yeah. Well, it's console console gaming is a very bloated field to talk about. So
let's focus on mobile games, because that's not bloated, right? We're going to be talking about, well, one mobile game, which is also on PC. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if it came on consoles as well at some point. And that's Hearthstone. And
yeah.
There you go. Justin is waking up.
Finally. Let's go. Charging up.
We're going to be talking about Hearthstone. We're going to get to the expansion and all of the minutiae of the experiences and all of the fun that we've had playing the game that, you know, the expansion that came out yesterday, actually. But before we do that, I want to get into a discussion that is maybe a little bit more accessible for people who haven't played Hearthstone yet and who might be intrigued or maybe even a little bit annoyed, or who have friends who aren't gamers at all that are looking at this thing and wondering what it is, or maybe considering trying it out. And for that, I'm going to turn to the recently awoken Justin Robert Young, because you're not a gamer, and you got into Hearthstone pretty seriously, is my understanding. What happened?
I don't play video games for any other reason other than I can't give myself that amount of time to do it. Like, I tend to get obsessive about things, and I tend to focus on them probably more than I should. And video games, when I was younger and had less to do, I would pay a lot more attention to it. But it really is just kind of an alcoholic keeping himself away from a bar, you know, to say that I don't play video games. But all that was kind of changed with Hearthstone because it's mobile. You know, that's the time I have to play video games is not sitting down. It is kind of on the go. And Hearthstone was that on the iPad, is now better on an iPhone, especially my gigantic roof shingle 6 Plus. So it fit the time that I had to give to it. And for that, I am very excited. Up to and including the fact that it might be the only thing that makes airline Wi-Fi useful. airline Wi-Fi is terrible for everything, including email and trying to load web pages. It is always a substandard experience, except for Hearthstone, because it really doesn't require that much bandwidth.
So, but you are talking about mobile. Were you playing other games before on your phone, or was Hearthstone?
Yeah, a little. I mean, like, you know, whatever the kind of hot game of the day was, I would, you know, give it a try, but nothing has kind of captured me like Hearthstone has.
So I just want to mention before we keep going, Hearthstone and Hearthstone are two valid pronunciations of that game. I have been hackled.
No, not
a lot. Yeah, they are. They really are. They really are. Ben Brode says Hearthstone in a video that I could link you to. And the pronunciation is actually Hearthstone. And you can say Hearthstone, but it's basically they're both right. I'm giving up on that thing. It's like GIF and JIF. Anyway.
Well, I mean, like, is that, but like a hearth is a thing, yeah. Right?
Yep.
Like, it's not a hearth and a hearth. Like, it is. I mean, unless it's pronounced hearth other places, is it?
I think it might be a little bit between the two. That's why you have the E and the A. I think it's hearth, between the two. So both hear what they want to hear.
Well, the innkeeper says it.
I was about to say, like, my argument
pull up a chair by the hearth.
Exactly.
Like, he doesn't say pull up a chair by the hearth.
That's where my argument ends. I believe all other arguments are invalid.
All right. But yeah, anyway, going back to the video games on mobile, you were playing games before. What made Hearthstone for you, you know, turn into that giant? Because I was hearing you on the morning stream earlier, and you know the game like a pro. You are hardcore into the game, so it's not like a casual gamer dabbling into it. You know everything there is to know about it. What happened?
It's really fun. You know, it's a really fun, rewarding game that you know, Blizzard's so smart. You know, they're just like, this is the first Blizzard game I've ever played, and it is so apparent how many rounded edges there are. From the second you download Hearthstone, to the fact that like the, you can play three games without signing up for an account. You know, just the cinematics, how they walk you through the game. And really, the community around it is just so enriching and so fun that, you know, it just kind of rewards these other little nooks and crannies of the game. There's always something new for me to focus on, you know, as I get into it. And so then I want cards. I have cards, so I want to build decks. I have decks. Now I want to build the most synergistic deck. And then I want to be able to... I want to be able to go ahead and get the most out of it. I want to now I need
and
to
get
understand
higher
the meta.
In ranks and yeah.
Yeah, now I need to understand the meta. Now I need to understand. Okay, well, if I'm getting murdered by aggro paladin, then I need to you know, tech in something that slows down the game for my tempo mage. Like, there's just everything kind of seamlessly builds from one spot to the next to where you're yelling on a podcast about tempo mage and aggro paladin.
You know, it's funny when you're saying there are so many rounded edges. That's definitely, and at this point I'm gonna be ethical and disclose the fact that I was an employee of Blizzard for 5 years, so, and I was at the time that the game was being developed and released, and I don't know how long I'm going to have to make that disclaimer. We were discussing it on the DLC podcast with Jeff Canada and Christian Spicer yesterday.
Yeah.
And they said I was good now. It had been long enough, but I'm going to still do it for a little bit. Anyway, I was working there.
It's good because, you know, sort of famously, Hearthstone was the kind of little game that could inside of Blizzard, right? Like, it's kind of always been the little game that could.
Exactly. It was a tiny team when you were talking about, you know, indie games for big developers. If there's any indie game at Blizzard, it's probably Hearthstone. And the philosophy of Blizzard is definitely to polish the game until it shines like nothing else, right? And that game had been in development for a while, and we would play it internally for hours and hours on end and for, you know, weeks and months, and then it was released. And, you know, everyone, when it first came out, there were so many people saying, that game is done, just release it now. When it came out as a beta and you know, it was, the access was very restricted. People were so frustrated because they thought that the game was done. And formally, it was kind of done, but there were so many details that take the game from good to great that were improved during that time. I guess you got into the beta pretty fast, Garrett. What was your experience getting into that game as a more hardcore gamer?
I think I got into the beta in the second week.
Okay.
That's pretty much as long as you could and not be a Blizzard employee. I don't know. It just hooked me almost immediately because I've not for a long time, but for longer than I have played Hearthstone, I've enjoyed card games. I started playing Magic a few years back and just really had a good time with it. And when Hearthstone was originally announced at PAX...
Sorry, Justin, can you turn off your mic? There's a little bit
sure.
of a background
yeah.
noise. Thanks.
When Hearthstone was announced at PAX, I actually wasn't excited about it. I saw the announcement and I was very confused as to why they were making a big deal of what looked like the smallest scale game Blizzard has ever conceived. Because I came from the Blizzard camp of I like Blizzard because everything is ridiculous and over the top and epic, and these games are going to steal away months of my life at a time. So I was expecting. I don't know what I was expecting because it was confusing to see them announcing anything at PAX. But I remember
that was a big concern. You know, well, not a big concern, but obviously when we were discussing how to announce it, the fact that it was not a huge epic game that overtakes your life, although in the end it kind of can, was very nerve-wracking for the company, and we didn't know how people were going to you know, we were confident that the game was cool, but the player base was going to be surprised. So anyway, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, no, so but then I got to play it and it just hooked me immediately. It was everything I liked about Magic, but way more accessible. It was Blizzard's, you know, glitz and glamour and polish on top of it. I don't know if anyone here has tried Magic Online, but it's pretty rough. This is the opposite of it. Like Justin said, it was just fun. Like, I was just like, wow, I was so wrong. This game is amazing. And I got real hooked real fast. And now I do a podcast about it. Now it's a large tent pole in my life.
You know, it's the fun aspect is really important. And there are a lot of people who often advocate for less randomness in the game, for example. And I think this is a little bit short-sighted because a lot of your most memorable, that's what the developers say all the time. A lot of the most memorable, oh my God, moments are the ones that you couldn't predict or that something completely unexpected happened. And you can, of course, there is always going to be, if you introduce that much randomness out of the game, it does create less of a predictable, you know, strategy. But at the same time, that's where a lot of the fun element comes from. And you guys are both mentioning that as a key element. So,
well, this drives me up the wall with the Hearthstone Reddit, and all of a sudden everybody, you know, is just John Nash, you know, the writing out their complex formulas that mathematically pin down every element of every deck, and decrying that that an unpredictable RNG element just ruins everything. And it's like, not like really what you're bitching about is that it is too complex of a math problem for you to solve. Like, and that to me is not a valid argument. You know, at some point, sure, you don't want it to just be the Web Spinner's Tavern Brawl, which was a waste of time, and we can all agree.
It was fun. I enjoyed it.
That was one of my
But that was an example of just like, all right, well, let's just flip a coin until somebody gets King Crush. You know?
Yeah.
And that wasn't very fun. But, you know, they've done, I think, an exceptional job of demonstrating why a digital card game matters. And stuff like what we are seeing now with Joust and Inspire and stuff like that are just great elements that are made so much better because this is digital and not paper. And it is using it to its advantage.
So we're going to get into the Grand Tournament and the specifics of it. But before we do that, would you guys recommend Hearthstone to anyone, to any gamer, or just to serious gamers?
I would say unless you hate fun, stay away from Hearthstone. Unless you hate fun, definitely try Hearthstone.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say just it's for the whole family. Come on in. Water's fine.
And so Hearthstone is for everyone. Excellent.
Yeah.
I can get behind that. And I think it's really possible to play and have fun even without spending money. I think you're going to want to spend money because you want to do the decks if you get really into it. And you're not going to get to rank, 10 or 5 if you don't spend money, or unless you're a beast in Arena, which is also possible. There's a way to make in-game money to acquire more decks and more gold to buy packs. So you could do it, but I think that you're going to want to. But it doesn't mean that you're not going to have fun. Even if you're at, rank 20 or 22, you're probably going to have fun. But anyway, enough of my sales pitch, and let's talk about the Grand Tournament specifically. So it was just released yesterday. It includes two mechanics that I'm not going to get into the details of, but that, let's suffice to say, they are mechanics that slow the game down because the meta game was very aggressive in the past few months, and a lot of the games consisted of the opponent rushing your health down as quickly as they could, and there was little you could do to counter them. There are exceptions, but mostly I think that's accurate. And the two mechanics, Joust and Inspire, are here to change that. What has your experience been with the game so far, and keeping in mind it's only been about 24 hours?
Oh, man. Mine has been the worst. I have had the worst. I've opened now 65 packs, and I've gotten a whopping one legendary. Darkbane, one of the Twin Valkyrie, the one that I think is actually good.
That's not so bad. I've gotten three, but all three of them are crappy.
Yeah, but you know what? I would have at least taken the dust from crappy legendaries as opposed to none whatsoever. That would have been nice.
But you don't, do you disenchant your stuff?
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm so scared that at some point in the future it's going to become good that I never disenchant anything.
I would rather be good now than possibly good 9 months.
That is an excellent point, sir. Thank you for educating me.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I opened 50, and I did get Confessor Paltris.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's one I was hoping to find.
Yeah, I don't really play Priest, but I think that'd be worth trying to put a deck
together. I think you should try playing Priest, because Priest got some really cool tools in TGT.
So, as we've just demonstrated, Hearthstone is for everyone, but not everyone can understand some of the more complex discussions. But your experience has been terrible with opening packs, Garrett, but...
it's also been terrible with Arena.
Excellent! So you haven't played Constructed, you've stuck to Arena?
No, yeah, exactly. I mean, the game it just launched yesterday, and... I have a job.
I'll tell you what, it is a wacky meta right now. Oh, it is just bonkers.
Yeah, I got up this morning, made my Totem Shaman deck, and finally logged some Constructed games, and those are going well. Those are going good. But yeah, the meta's insane. I don't know what I'm going up against. Oddly enough, saw the first couple games I played today, I saw Aggro Paladin, and I'm sorry, but I judge those people. They have no soul.
I agree.
They don't have fun with the game.
I agree. It's just try something fun. I mean, I think it's a pretty good time for people to get into Hearthstone at this point. It's everything's changing, and there aren't any set strategies. Everyone's trying to figure out everything. I think it's a pretty good time to get into it.
Oh, bless you, Justin.
Oh, sorry about that. I was trying to go for the mute button. I missed it.
Too late. Too slow.
I think Hearthstone's really kind of always a good time to jump in, because I mean you can make arguments that coming in at the beginning of a new set is a good time because everything's in flux and you're going to learn with everyone else, but you could also argue that if you're just now coming in, where do you start with cards? I think Hearthstone's a good game to where you can make your own goals and play your own way and have a good time with it, and I think that can start at really any point.
Yeah, and Blizzard cares about the casual, you know? This is not just a game for lunatics like Garrett and me and Patrick.
Yeah, if anything, I feel like they've been ignoring us for the last 2 months.
Yes, no, and you have about 45 minutes of your hour-long podcast dedicated to it.
Oh, you left that review.
Yeah, was that it? Did you guys get a review?
Many, sir.
I think it is very, very interesting that and I think telling to the success of Blizzard that they are understanding that if somebody is to go wanting, it is the hardcore player right now, you know, and to continue to make this as friendly of a game as possible, because ultimately, like, the, you know, financially, they're looking at this like something that can be Clash of Clans big, you know, or bigger. So you need to make it as friendly as possible.
Yeah. And I'm kind of just playing off of in jokes from the Anger Chicken. But I mean, yeah. I think now's a great time to be a hardcore player because we just got 132 new cards. So,
yes, absolutely.
Go nuts, you crazy people who want to spend a bunch of money and be the first people to figure out the new hot deck.
So are you one of those people, Justin? Did you how much you just pre-ordered and got 50 packs,
I did,
right?
I did my 50 pack pre-order. I was actually at a conference all day yesterday, so I haven't really gotten, aside from very rudely playing during somebody's presentation, I have not played much, but I did tech in a couple different the Effigy Secret, because I've been running this Tempo Mage, and so I literally just teched in random new mage deck, secrets. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I just put in random new mage secrets just to, you know, screw with people so they didn't so they wouldn't think that it was definitely just Counterspell or Mirror Entity.
Oh man, I am firmly convinced that Effigy is a damn good card.
Effigy's been pretty sweet.
Yeah, I got one on I was streaming my pack openings. I got two or three legendaries. Yeah, three. And none of them are good, but, you know, whatever. I'm happy I got a bunch of epics as well. How many legendaries, Justin?
I just got the one. I got a Paltris. That was my only legendary.
Okay. That's still not bad.
No, it's a usable legendary. It's something that I'll probably put together a deck around. So I was happy. I'll probably wind up buying more and opening.
Yeah. Me too, possibly. I put together a completely crappy Beast Druid deck that I typed in, you know, Beast and put all of those cards in my deck and went into the ranked game and played a little bit. It's been holding on okay, I think, only because everyone else is doing similarly silly things. But well, it's
so deep onto your love of Savage Combatant back from the Nerd Tech. The episode of Anger Chicken. It's okay. Yeah. You can admit that you were wrong and that Beast Group is bad, Patrick. It's okay.
It's been doing well, all right? It's been doing not worse than my other decks, which is not saying much.
I'm saying all this with the full knowledge that next week a Beast Druid deck might emerge and I'll be completely wrong. But I
just it'll be the new Grim Patron deck.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Everyone
will be crying for the nerfing of Beast Druid.
Yeah, please nerf Beast Druid.
But I really love that time as well when you try to do strange things and you don't yet know that they don't work. So you're all hopeful and try to get new interactions and synergies into place. And it's a really fun time for the game. So I'm really looking forward to the next few weeks. But talking about the potential catering to casuals a little bit more. Have you guys seen those data mined strings in the new version of the game that seem to indicate that we might get a two-player co-op mod?
Baby.
Yeah, so that's super interesting as well. Would you guys be interested in that?
No.
If it was...
Just kidding. I love it. I want to play it. It's right now with Garrett, and I want to play with you, and I'll play with anybody listening. I'd be really excited for that.
Garrett?
I would be very interested if I could play two people against two other people. If it's just against an AI-controlled boss, I think I'm going to get really bored with it super fast.
So this is interesting because for me, it is playing against someone else is always a little bit intimidating. But playing against it, basically, it's the difference between PvP and PvE, right? You get in PvP, someone has to lose in order for the thing to work. One has to lose, one has to win. When you play against the computer can lose, and you can get into that mechanic of every other, you know, never-ending game like MMO and other MMOs and other online games where maybe you can do this thing with other people on a regular basis and you have like this epic weekly version of it that will reward you with a little bit more currency, and you can get into this thing where you have those crazy combinations with your cards affecting the other person's card, and the balance doesn't really matter anymore because no one on the other end of this is losing. So you can completely break the game and rethink the entire mechanics of the decks to make these things super fun. And again, there's less frustration because you're not losing against an opponent and you don't have to lose 50% of the time. Have I convinced you, Garrett?
No.
You are not worried. All right. Well, it's not your thing. I understand.
No, I mean, what you're explaining sounds fun, but it also sounds grindy. So if we're doing the same fight week after week just to get gold or a couple card packs or something, all right, that's cool. But now it feels like something I have to do for
me. I would see that as a stepping stone to 2-on-2, like play.
You know, yeah, it could be. It could be.
Yeah, the only other thing I can think of is maybe it's like a brawl, so maybe it's not something we're going to see as often. Maybe there'll just be a two-person brawl.
Although, I think that's kind of the brilliance of brawl for them, right? Is that they can sort of soft test a lot of this stuff or do a teaser like they did with the constructed deck for the Grand Tournament.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I thought that was a really smart use of it. And, yeah, and that's part of, because my biggest complaint with Brawl is that it gets super old super fast, but it's reset every week, so who really cares? You get a new Brawl. Yeah.
Brawl is really the super casual mode because you do it once, you get your thing, and nothing else matters, and you can do it just for fun. And when the stakes aren't high, obviously it's not going to be as exciting, but it's also not going to be as frustrating. So you can just go in and just try stuff. And it would actually make a lot of sense to have this introduced, at least by way of Brawl initially, and have this crazy thing where the Brawl is, yeah, two people against a computer opponent. So maybe that will happen. So let's round up our discussion with discussing how successful that thing is. There's a study that, not a study, but a firm that analyzes stuff and that got data from gathered from credit cards and a bunch of other factors that claims Hearthstone is pulling in $20 million a month equal parts from mobile and PC. And $20 million a month, obviously it's not a Blizzard source, so it might be inaccurate. They're saying it's about inaccurate to a few percent, so it's roughly that number. $20 million is especially interesting when you realize that the game was initially developed by a team of 15 people, which lets, I've mentioned this in a couple other shows, but if you give them a rough average salary of $100,000 a year, that's about, you know, you say it was developed for, let's say, 3 years. It's about $5 million budget. Let's double it for good measure, $10 million budget. That is half the cost, the budget of the game is half of what it brings in. Admittedly, revenue, not profit, but
yeah,
half of what it brings in every month. That's pretty insane to me.
So from somebody who's worked at Blizzard, how big of a success is that, you know, internally? Like what are the prime economic engines for Blizzard are, you know, Warcraft, probably Starcraft after that, or Diablo, right? But like how big internally is, if let's just say $20 million a month, how big is that to Blizzard?
Well, obviously, I'm not going to say anything about that because, first of all, I don't have a lot of information, but I couldn't reveal any information that
I
would have.
In general, is it good? Is that good? You know,
I don't think it's bad by any standard. You know, $20 million a month is significant for any company. Obviously, you know, there is, I think the juggernaut at Blizzard is still World of Warcraft. I would be surprised if it wasn't. But I'm sure that $20 million a month is a significant amount of money, because when you think about the other games, Diablo, you buy it once and you're done. So I don't think there is on that point, I don't know, but I really don't think that there's $20 million worth of Diablo being sold every month, right? I don't think there's $20 million worth of StarCraft either. I'm guessing we could look at the financials, but I'm sure World of Warcraft brings in a lot more. Heroes of the Storm, I don't know how much it makes a month. I don't think they're releasing that information.
They are.
But yeah, $20 million. I will tell you this. According
to revenues released by Blizzard in 2013, World of Warcraft made $1 billion.
Well, yeah. So there you go. That was 2013, though. It was a little bit different.
Like, we're looking at a full year. I mean, right now, if they've got what, 5 million and some change subscribers paying $15 a month, then that's not compensating for Asian countries where they don't have the same subscription model necessarily every region.
Yeah.
I mean, it just for a ballpark figure, that's $75 million a month.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot than that. But.
A little bit more. But yeah, so that's still a lot more. But I mean, this is not insignificant for anyone. There is something that will, you know, we can compare it to other things. The game Monster Strike, for example, which is developed by Mixie, a Japanese game developer, is bringing in at the moment, so we don't know how sustainable that is, but at the moment, it's bringing in $4 million a day. and that's mostly in Japan. It's a super giant success. It's kind of a Pokemon type thing, but still, $4 million a day. By comparison, King, developer of Candy Crush Saga, brought in $600 million in 2014. That's $1.5 million a day. And Supercell brought in $1.7 million, was it, a day? And they developed, you know, Clash of Clans, Heyday, Boom Beach. I think it was more, I think it's $1.7 billion in 2014. So there are companies that are making more, but certainly I don't think that Blizzard was expecting Hearthstone to be making that much money. I don't think anyone, I'm coming back to what you were saying, Garrett, initially, however much Blizzard was confident that the game was good, and we certainly were, I don't think anyone could have realized that so many people would have been excited about it.
Or that this would be like a dominant esports thing, right? Like it's become kind of almost immediately, like when you think about where it is in stature to some of the other esports stuff, and I only kind of casually watched that scene and really only through Hearthstone's lenses, like, it's kind of microwaved its success, right? It just kind of immediately took this place as a big, big game to play and watch.
Yeah, it's very easy to understand, which I think is a giant, advantage that Hearthstone has. But I would say it's probably the third biggest esports game now. And it's a 2-year-old game? I would say, you know, League of Legends, Dota are the first two. They're consistently on top on Twitch. But Hearthstone is usually third and very often, you know, gets a little bit higher up there. And but going back to the launch of the game, a lot of people were saying it's obviously an esports game, but it wasn't obvious for the company. You know, the developer said, "We don't." It's easy for you guys to say because now we're seeing all of this, but we had to wait and see. It was a small team, and the developers were saying we had to wait and see and make sure that we would put the resources in something that was actually happening and not something we thought was going to happen. Garrett.
Yeah, I was going to say one of our earliest requests early on when Hearthstone first came out was we need a spectator mode. What's going on? We're trying to do these tournaments and it's a total, you have to bend over backwards to show this game, to stream it. And it took a while to get there. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, as annoyed as I was that we didn't have an easy way to stream the game, it was a good problem to have because it meant that people gave a crap. Like, we were that excited about the game that we wanted to do tournaments about this online card game that you can play on a phone.
Well, if that whole discussion has not gotten you excited for Hearthstone, then I don't know what will. Before we wrap up, let's take a couple of seconds to mention that Mario Maker is coming out in a few days, and Mad Max is also coming out in a few days. I mentioned Metal Gear, but Mad Max is one that I might be even more excited about. Probably mistakenly so, because I'm actually excited about the movie and the game. I'm not sure is going to be that good. But I mean, you guys understand me, right? Witness me. It gets you excited for everything that bears the name Mad Max.
Dude, the movie's so awesome.
Oh, I can't wait for it to be out on Blu-ray, and I'm going to be watching it every day.
It's so damn good. I'm going to be doing the same darn thing, and I'm hopeful for the game because it looks like it's going to scratch that Shadow of Mordor itch. So if they just don't completely screw it up, I think I'm going to have fun with it.
Yeah, it's a Shadow of Mordor Batman type of combat. It also has racing and racing combat, which obviously for Mad Max makes sense. It's an open world game and it's developed by Avalanche, which is the developer Just Cause. So they know how to do these open world things. So yeah, I think it could be good. I don't think it's going to be incredible, but because it's Mad Max, it could be fun. And I love Shadow of Mordor. So
yeah.
And finally, The Taken King, Destiny. I still love Destiny. I'm going to be playing it, and I want it in my console soon. It's coming out on September 15th. All right, let's bring this show to an end. Before we part with our listeners, Justin, can you tell us more about yourself and possibly about the Contender game?
Oh, sure I can. Everybody, you can follow me, Justin R. Young, on Twitter. You can follow the Contender Game. Last 5 days, we are just about to hit 2,000 backers. As soon as we do that, it's going to be 50 cards added to the base deck. And I can reveal here that we will be setting one final goal for our final 5 days. And that will be to get to 3,000 backers. If we're able to do that, we're going to make a 500-card base deck. We are so, so, so excited. So go ahead and check it out, thecontender.us/Kickstarter.
Dude, what's up with not shipping to Europe?
We do ship to Europe. The only the only thing that we don't ship is we've been trying to make the decision on international shipping for the rewards that would require two shipments. And I think what we settled on is just that, you know, unfortunately, you know, anybody who wants to order those packages, which again, the base deck available for international shipping right now. You can go ahead and check
it. I did not realize this. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go back it right now.
Yeah, no, totally.
Cool. All right. Garrett, where can people find you and find out more about your awesome, awesome podcast about Hearthstone, which is reaching the old age of 100 episodes next week?
Yeah. Everyone should go head on over to amove.tv. That's AMOVE.TV, where you can find all the shows that I do. Anger Chicken's hitting 100 next week. Check out the Patreons for those shows. And follow me on Twitter at Garrett Art. Other than that, yeah, I just hope I get better luck opening packs from here on out.
We will pray for you, Garrett. All right. I am Not Patrick on Facebook. I'm also Not Patrick on Twitter. You can find my shows at frenchspin.com. Pixels is obviously one of them. The Phileas Club, where I get together with different people from different countries in the world, is another. It's super fun, and we discuss the news from the past month, and we confront ideas and views and cultures, and that's a lot of fun, actually. And you can also comment on that blog, frenchspin.com, if you think we've said some pretty stupid things, which we often do. If you enjoy French and do speak French, you can find my French shows at frenchspin.fr. That's going to be it for us. We will be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks so much for listening, and talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.
Job's done.
Yes!
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both as twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.